The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange, joined by Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Palillo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. If you're a Texans fan, the three of us launched our second season of Texans on Tap, our Houston Texans podcast. We'll be doing live reactions following every game this season, including this Saturday after Giants Texans. You can find that over on our other YouTube channel, Sports Map Texans, or in audio form at all your favorite podcast apps. Guys, the Astros are streaking. As we record this, Houston is a season high, 7 games over .500, sitting in first place atop the West by 1/1000th of a percentage point. Seattle swept their series against the Mets, who mustered just one run over 3 games against the Mariners. Thanks for nothing, New York. A couple things stand out from this stretch from Houston. Power surge and the statement season that Hunter Brown is having. For Brown, after giving up 25 earned runs and ballooning his ERA to above 9 in April, from May on, Brown has a 2.67 ERA and a 3.65 OPS against. Considering the sustained success he's having, I'm curious if you guys are believers in Hunter Brown as a front of the rotation starter. If I can borrow a line from House of the Dragon, is Hunter Brown the prince that was promised?
Look, there's not any reason to not buy in. Does this mean he's going to be a year in, year out 17 game winner, become a 200 inning horse? Well, there's no reason to rule it out with a 25-year-old who's been just spectacular now for approaching 3 months to chase a couple of the number sets that you put in play there. May 17th, so more than a month and a half into the season, Hunter Brown made a start in which he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings. That's bad. He lowered his ERA in that game to 7.71. 15 starts since then, he's at 2.40. He's not remotely close to the Cy Young race because it all counts. But to take his ERA from embarrassing you belong in the minor leagues to pitching at a Cy Young level over a longer stretch of the season than he was just brutal. And remember, that was after stinking basically from May on last season. This is what you hope for in the blossoming of young players. And will he deliver on the stage that the Astros hope to be on in October in a starting pitching role? Well, everyone will be delighted to find out. Also, over those 15 starts, he's averaged exactly 6 innings per start, 90 innings. And he's usually gone exactly 6 innings. So he's going, by modern definition, 6 innings deep on a regular basis, keeping you away from some of the middle relief guys. Remember when Montero was here, guys like that. So Joe Espada can lather, rinse, repeat, you know, go Brown for 6 and then Abreu, Presley, Hader. Good night, everybody. So that he's the best starter on this staff at this point is unquestioned. Framber Valdez, though, has done very solid work overall himself now for better than 2 months. But that's just 2/5 of a starting rotation. You're certainly going to need a minimum of 3 starters in a postseason series. Anyone else rising to the occasion of late?
That's my cue. How about that Spencer Arrighetti guy? My Lord, breaking the rookie record in the AL, back-to-back starts with at least 12 strikeouts. A lot of these videos we were talking about, hey, this guy should probably still be in Sugar Land. It's just they need him right now. They had to call him up. And I'm starting to wonder, could this be the future of the Astros rotation with Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrigetti in the years to come, maybe being your one and two right there? And, you know, Hunter Brown's just easy, blazing 99 miles an hour. Arrigetti's no slouch. He's in the mid-90s. He's mixing in four-seamers, two-seamers, slurves, and all kinds of different things. And I saw some more changeups out of him over the weekend, too. I don't think that's a fluke. He has the stuff, and they talk about in the broadcast all the time. He's really into the analytics, so you know he's a smart guy. He has the ability. You know, can he just keep putting it together? But, you know, doing it again, it's the Red Sox, 13 strikeouts. They're one of the best hitting teams in the league. He had a pretty good performance against the Dodgers. They were a little undermanned in that game. His last game against Tampa, when he had the 12 strikeouts, five hits, only two walks. In the game against Boston, only one walk. I think that's the big thing for Hunter Brown and Arrigetti, is just limiting those walks. It makes such a huge difference, and they're really starting to do that. So I see really good things for the Astros' future, that they just find a way. Luis Garcia comes out of nowhere, and now you got Spencer Arrigetti, and Hunter Brown's turning into what you thought he could be. I think the Astros are in a good spot, and let's give the pitching coaches, you know, some props here. Obviously, what they're doing is working right now.
Imagine if they had a catcher who had a clue behind the plate. In Arrigetti's case, it's about command, right? He struggled with control in the minors early this season, just putting too many runners on, and one hit can be a three-run homer. Big innings result from walks, especially leadoff walks. Hunter Brown was kind of curious the way he fell apart last year, because it's not as if he was wild other than occasionally in the strike zone, which can do damage against you too, of special value for these two guys going forward. They're amazingly cheap labor, right? Hunter Brown's not even arbitration eligible until 2026. Arrigetti, you're talking two more years beyond that. Those two guys combined next season will make less than $1.6 million, while Montero's making 11.5, while McCullers is making 17. So the Astros, with their payroll problems, all the dead money, Christian Javier, you're not going to get close to $12.8 million a bang for buck, since he's going to miss probably at least half of next season. Having A, good pitchers is of vital importance, and B, having a couple who are dirt cheap. And, you know, there's a little bit of what goes up sometimes must come down. These are young guys who you think can blossom to be real frontline starters, right? 25 and 24 years old. JP France, to his credit, was a happy fluke for a couple of months last season. Ronel Blanco, we have to watch a little bit the same way. He's clearly in a fade. He's 30 years old. So you hope it's just workload driven. It's not like he should be washed up all of a sudden. But while Blanco has slipped, right, he's not even averaging 5 innings per start over his last 4 starts, earned run average well over 4 over his last 8 starts. To have Brown and Arrigetti on the rise is just of critical importance to the Astros, because you reference the Mariners, they still have the clearly ranking starting rotation in the American League West, and what a race we have now. A quick RIP to the reigning World Series champion Texas Rangers, because they are dead, and as I put in a column the other day, up in the Metroplex, now they can focus on more playoff disappointment from the Cowboys, because the Rangers are done.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on Josh's point about Arrigetti, since July 7th, he has an ERA of 3.25 and a 2.05 batting average against. He's still developing. He obviously arrived sooner at the big club than they had hoped. They'd hoped to give him a little bit more time to bake down in the minors, but you could obviously see the tools that they were excited about. And Charlie, as you mentioned, the converse of Brown's ascension has been Ronel Blanco going the other way. Blanco was having an out-of-body experience. He went into the All-Star break with a 2.56 ERA, and he's come way back to earth since the All-Star break. 5.68 ERA with an 8.11 OPS against. And as you mentioned, half of those games, he's gone less than 4 1/3 innings. So not the trajectory you want to see, but some of us were fearful that this may come, you know, as the innings load started to stack up. So maybe another year of reps under his belt, maybe he has a little bit more virality to be able to come into next season and be a good back end of the rotation contributor for you. Well, and Robert Valdez, you know, sitting with that 3.46 ERA, if you take out that 10-hit, 8 earned run game against the Angels, he's much closer to a 3 ERA for the season. But again, file that under ifs and buts. We spoke on Thursday, moving to the offense here, we spoke on Thursday about the need to use Victor Caratini and Yadier Diaz in the same lineup. which means Yordan Alvarez full-time and left. We're seeing that now. They are going to that offense more, and it's responding. Not surprising that Yordan found his power stroke on the road. Yordan is hitting .438 with an OPS of over 1,500 in August. It's pretty good. And we've spoken about Bregman's success in August. Right on cue, he's hitting .359 for the month with an OPS of over 1,000. So they're going to need it with Seattle's bats adding much needed spark to their offense. How do you see this race playing out over the next few weeks, especially as Houston's schedule continues to be challenging?
Yeah, I think it's essentially a coin flip. The schedule favors Seattle, not lopsidedly, but it favors Seattle. Let's remember the Mariners have the clear upper hand right now for the tiebreaker, which last season got the Astros the division title over the Rangers. Unless the Astros sweep the three-game series at Minute Maid Park, the last series of the season, Mariners take the season series, right? They just need one win here, and that would take care of it. The Astros, it's not like they're scared going on the road, and they're over just being a brutal road team the way they were the first couple of months of the season. But after the upcoming homestand, they have a seven-gamer, four at Baltimore, followed by three at Philadelphia. They also have a series at San Diego, which at this point in time is the best team in the National League. Padres have won 16 out of 19. We'll see where they are a month from now, but right now that's a playoff team. And then the last three games of the season, what will the Cleveland Guardians have riding on the series? Maybe they have everything wrapped up. They know they're the number two seed in the American League, and they're pulling Jose Ramirez after five innings, and they're pulling starting pitchers after four or five innings to gird for the playoffs. Or if the Twins or Royals are right there and Cleveland's going for it that weekend, that makes that series a lot tougher for the Astros. That's four of their six remaining road series after Tampa Bay. The Astros are facing really good teams. They do get the Angels in there. But Seattle has three games left of the Dodgers, three games left of the Yankees. But the American League West dregs, in which we can now include the Rangers, they're done. And then the A's and the Angels. The Astros have 10 games left against the A's and Angels. They're done with the Rangers. The Mariners have 17 games left. Seven with the Rangers. I don't know if the defending, but now dead World Series champs are going to get up to play spoiler against the Mariners in September. And it's not like that's some vicious rivalry. I mean, heck, you know, if anything, from a fan standpoint, Rangers lay down so the Astros don't win the American League West. So you have the Astros pedigree and the expectation that in the end, they'll figure out how to win this division because it's been their division on lockdown for the better part of a decade. But Seattle's legit. That starting pitching is showing no signs of faltering. They have the better closer, Andrés Muñoz, over Josh Hader. And they pounded the Mets Sunday night in Julio Rodriguez's return. He went 0-for-5 with five strikeouts. But they're getting some contributions from the pickups. Randy Arozarena playing very well with the Mariners, as he did the last couple months with the Rays. They get a little bit out of Justin Turner. Victor Robles has been a real surprise since they picked him up. So Julio off that ankle, they're going to DH him, build him up to speed. I think this race is going down to the last week of the season without question.
For me with the bats, it'll be this Rays series because we just played the Rays not that long ago, only scored five runs in three games in that series. So are the Astros going to be able to keep that offense going after, you know, what they just did to the Red Sox? I think that'll be big. Brandon, you mentioned Yordan. He's now played five straight games in left field. That looks like something that they're going to keep doing because it's working. So Chandler Rome had some interesting thoughts in his column this week about how much Bregy and Altuve have been playing. They've played at least 960 defensive innings this year. Only 20 other players have done that. And we got to see on Sunday that with Yordan in left field, they were able to give Altuve a day in the DH spot, get him off his feet a little bit, let Dubon play some second base. So we've been saying that all year. Like, you know, can we get Altuve in his 30s, you know, just maybe a DH spot, a half day off, whatever you want to call it. And we saw that happen. That was good to see. It's also good to see DiZenzo and Caratini have started together twice in the last four games. So I think that's a recipe for success. I know DiZenzo's not, you know, lighting it up. He's not Babe Ruth or anything, but you see the power. You see he's actually playing a pretty nice first base. I just think he gives something to the offense. He gives them a chance because look at what the other options are right here. Last 30 games for Dubon hitting .137. Last 30 for Chaz hitting .175. Singleton at .235, but that's just kind of basically who he is, right? And then you look at Myers last 30 games hitting .196. We haven't seen much from Pedro Leon, but look what happens when Breggy and Yordan and, you know, and Altuve get going. You don't need all the other guys to be heroes. You just need DiCenzo to be decent, just give you something every now and then. And he's doing that. So I'd like to see them continue playing him. You never know. You bring up young blood towards the end of a year. Sometimes they can just kind of take off and play over their heads a little bit. I know he's only hitting in the 230s right now, but he's had such limited at bats. We got to see a bigger sample size before we pass too much judgment there. But I like the way this is going. Caratini, we'll see. I just don't think they're ever going to play him at first base, but he's been really good, man. I like these lineups, and being able to put Yiner in there, DH, seems to be working. I'll be really curious to see when Kyle Tucker does come back. Are we still going to see Yordan in left field every day? I'll be watching for that.
The Astros lineup after the cleanup spot remains very weak. You're just hoping to scratch together a little production. Jeremy Peña is not a legit five-hole hitter, and they're just grab-bagging and hoping, right? Jake Meyers every once in a while run into a mistake and hit a home run. Chaz McCormick used to be able to do that. Josh gave numbers on some of the other guys. Maybe Aledmys Diaz is saving it all up for one magical September moment. It's absolutely essential that the top four produce. Altuve ended his home run drought. Does he have a finishing kick, second wind after all the workload on his now 34-year-old body? Alex Bregman, yes, August Breggy, over the last five games entering the Rays series, five consecutive multi-hit games. But of note, Alex Bregman's not had a good September since 2019. Right? He's put together these massive Augusts, and then he played 161 games last season. I don't know if he peaks physically in August, catches his second wind, and then it blows away in September. But let's put Alex Bregman, and by the way, a salary drive, under the microscope when the calendar turns to the last month of the season. Because as I said, it's been 5 years since he had a good September. Yordan's capable, as we talked about last week, of a 10-12 home run. Well, maybe now make it a 15 home run a month with five homers in his last five games. And Yiner continues to hover at 300. Right, the home run bat has not been for the season where everyone figured it might be coming off of his rookie season. But his overall offensive numbers are just fine. It's basically a push between he and the Mariners catcher, Cal Raleigh, for the two best catcher bats in the American League. Ashley Rutschman's maybe the best overall catcher. But after the four spot, the Astros lineup is weak. So the big guys need to do the heavy lifting because you're asking lightweights to do it otherwise.
Well, you talked about the number four spot. Let's talk about the number four spot because this team asked Yiner Diaz to protect Yordan Alvarez when Tucker went down, and that is no small ask. And he has answered the bell for the month of August. I'm looking at Yiner's batting average, 324, 460 slug, OPS of 850. The home run numbers haven't been there. We saw him hit one in Fenway. It's interesting that you're seeing Alex Bregman and Yiner going over the monster. Where's that offense at home? It's just really strange because we've talked on this channel before about like the guys not using the Crawford boxes as much as we would hope the right-handed hitters would. Are you a little concerned about the fact that I know the win-loss record is better at home over the season, but are you a little concerned that it takes leaving Minute Maid Park for Yordan Alvarez to find his power stroke?
In Yordan's case, it's just very weird that he has the reverse home road splits. Right? He can hit pop-ups that can carry into the Crawford boxes. And obviously, the typical Yordan home run is not a wall scraper. So I don't have reason to believe it's in his head. Sometimes things just go this way, right? Last year, there was the grasping for straws. Oh, it's the batter's eye. It's this, that. No, the Astros just sucked at home. End of story. Inexplicably sucked at home. But they sucked at home. In Bregman's case, you know, he's made a living hitting cheap Crawford box home runs. This year, if Alex Bregman had played all of his games in Minute Maid Park, he'd have 20 home runs. He has 17. If Alex Bregman had played all of his games at Camden Yards, Baltimore, he'd have 9. So Alex Bregman plays the course pretty well for power. But Alex Bregman, when he is hitting well, uses the field. A pitch on the outer half of the plate, go with it. You can't shift three infielders to the left side anymore, but the second baseman against Bregman and against so many right-handed hitters, he's close as you can get to right behind the bag. So that hole on the right side is still there. Bregman is not a great power hitter, right? The 41 home run monster season he had in 2019 was A, a monster season, and B, also in part product of the juiced ball. Yuli Gurriel hit 31 home runs that year, never hit half that otherwise. So I don't know if Bregman fell in love a little bit with the home run swing and became more pull conscious. But right now, you know, we see he's driving the ball to all fields, the 441 footer, you know, that wasn't pulled down the line. That was a ball that he stayed on and bashed it to the you know, deep part of the monster out there. So I'm not really worried about the home road thing. You just trust that the cream will rise and the overall production will be where it needs to be and should be from the Astros' best offensive players.
Yeah, one of the guys I'm looking at, it's not just Yordan with the home road splits. Caratini's been much better on the road. He's hitting .239 for his batting average at home, .317 on the road. And he's really climbed up as far as his batting average since he's come back to the team. He was in like the 250. He was at 257, and since returning from injury, he's up to 275. And I feel like we should give Caratini a little more credit. This may surprise you. He has the second highest slugging on the team behind Yordan if he had enough at bats to qualify. So when he is playing, he's hitting for some power, man. He's giving you something there. And being a switch hitter, he gives you a lot of flexibility. Seems like a lot of the pitchers like throwing to him. So having him and Yiner as your options at catcher, and you can use him at DH or however you want to go. Really nice pickup by Dana Brown grabbing Caratini in the offseason. He's still going to be with the team next year too. So all signs pointing up. Let's see if he can keep it going over a bigger sample size.
And coupled with his production and that after an off day Thursday, the Astros play 18 consecutive days. Caratini should see a good deal of time behind the plate.
So guys, part of the resurgence of the Astros since June has been that they've been doing it without most of their starters. Most of the starters have been on the IL. One of those guys is real close to returning. Justin Verlander is scheduled for one more rehab start, and that would seemingly put him in the rotation with the big club maybe sometime middle of next week. Justin, in his first outing in rehab, his first rehab assignment, 3 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. He said that he was happy with, you know, how he was throwing the ball, able to throw all pitches, but not necessarily happy with maybe his control yet. It's understandable as he's still ramping his way back up. And how do you project Verlander's return impacting this rotation?
He's an all-time great, but I think the expectations, even for Justin Verlander, have to be measured. He's 41 years old. He's coming back, joining a playoff drive after being out for 2 months. I know there's some, he should be really fresh. He's been out injured, and you can't convince me that the neck hasn't tied into the arm a little bit. So while he hasn't logged a whole bunch of innings, I don't think he's going to come back and be 7-inning Justin Verlander. I just think that the hope should be a solid cog in the engine, in the machine. With the 18 consecutive days starting Friday, Verlander makes the one more rehab start. I think that sets him up to pitch against Boston, either Tuesday, a night game, or then Wednesday's an afternoon game. I think the Astros look to go 3 full turns of a 6-man rotation, right? 18 days, 3 starts apiece, and then when you get the rare off day in September, you don't stay with the 6-man unless they're all pitching well, right? You skip over someone who hadn't pitched well over the last couple of starts, and to me, that has to include even if it's Verlander, right? You can't go by career achievement. This is a tough race with the Mariners, so I think it's a 3-start audition, if you will, to see how he looks and what you can hope for beyond that, because you're looking at 7 starts max, maybe 8, but I think 7 is the number once Verlander joins the rotation if he stays in it the rest of the way. And that's pitching on at least 5 days rest each time out.
I'm excited to see Verlander come back. I'm kind of with that idea. Hopefully he's taken a long time to get back. He should be ready. We got reports he was in the mid-90s. So I think, Brandon, you're onto something at getting the control where he wants it, getting all that ramped up, facing big league hitting. There will be an adjustment there, but he is Justin Verlander. So I'm thinking what we're all hoping is he's going to come back and then carry this all the way through the postseason if they're lucky enough to get there and be the guy that they counted on. They're paying Justin Verlander a lot of money to come in and do a job. And I think just him with him returning and what you're seeing from Spencer Arrigetti and what you're seeing from Hunter Brown and even Kikuchi, like all these guys are kind of feeding off each other and pitching really well. You wonder, you know, if Verlander comes back and shows you something, if it just gives everybody a little more juice, like, wow, maybe we can have a rotation similar to the Mariners and have that be one of the strengths of our ball club. And obviously the offense is a lot better for the Astros. So I'm optimistic. I don't think Verlander's coming back if he's not ready. So we'll find out. He's going to go out there and do his thing. And man, if he's hitting the mid-90s and that slider's working and he started working in that changeup a little bit before he got injured, curveball's always been good. I expect Verlander to come in. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be the guy that goes seven innings of one run ball anymore. I think he's kind of a, maybe in that Hunter Brown category, you'll hope to get six innings out of him of really dominant stuff. But we'll see. You know, he is 41, but he's Justin Verlander too. We know, you know, Nolan Ryan, I know he's an outlier, but he was really good in his 40s. Maybe Verlander can muster some of that himself.
In theory, it should be a meritocracy. Charlie, you mentioned JV needs to play himself into this situation here, but does Joe Espada have the, I don't want to say courage, because I don't want to make it sound like he's scared of excluding JV out of the five-man rotation, but That's a big call, because like JV is a Hall of Famer and you are paying him a lot of money. We saw how they handled the Jose Abreu situation. Now, granted, that was earlier in the year, so you had a little bit more runway to deal with. This is at the back end of the year. You're in that tight race. You don't have the ability to carry a pitcher in a five-man rotation that's not pulling his weight. But do you foresee the Astros making that call?
I don't think Espada will run and hide from it. Remember at Wrigley Field early in the season when Espada was 6 weeks into the job and Verlander was struggling to get through five innings. Pitch count was rising and he got to 4 2/3, just one out away. And here came the rookie manager saying, it's time. Right? Verlander, with the delayed start to his season, they felt he wasn't built up to go beyond where he was. And Espada's well aware that Verlander's well aware. At that time, the 300 pursuit was much more plausible than it is at this point. But Espada made the move that he felt was in the best interest of the ball club, not just for that very minute, but looking a little wider than that. And after the 8 days off, 18 consecutive days before one off, you know, they have a couple sprinkled in before another stretch of 16 consecutive games. I think you're not going to stick with a six-man rotation. And Kikuchi needs a little more to his Astros resume beyond the first two excellent starts. But if Brown keeps humming and Valdez keeps pitching well and Arrigetti is really on to something, you know, unless Ronel Blanco is just really going to tail way, way off, I think that they consider maybe piggybacking a couple of guys. There's not use for six starters in a rotation when you have a day off, you know, unless you want guys pitching every seventh day. So who might they decide if Verlander starts, but he's at 87 pitches in the fourth inning, is one of their starters the guy that they say, hey, you're better suited to be the bridge guy to the back end of the bullpen? But, you know, Verlander, as amazing as he's been, right? He wasn't awesome early this season before he went down. He's also not a Supreme Court justice, right? The job's not his for life or until retirement if exigent circumstances dictate the decision needs to be made to go with someone else. Verlander, of course, is still, we presume, the upside of rendering this all moot, and he's six innings, two earned runs, six innings, two earned runs, and then, of course, he's staying in the rotation.
I wonder if Verlander is ready, you know, and he's ramped up, and he can give you what you expect out of him. Well, keep in mind, he had a 3.95 ERA this season before he went down. We have some starters on the rotation with an over 5 ERA, Spencer Arrigetti. I know he's been fantastic as of late. But I also wonder, too, with, you know, they're talking about too many innings for Blanco. He's never done this before. Arrigetti's never pitched, you know, this many innings coming down the stretch. You wonder, well, would they skip Blanco in the rotation just to take some innings off him? And, you know, maybe it's not all going to be just performance-based. Maybe it's going to be a, hey, we want to make sure you're good to go when we need you the most down the stretch. So I'll be interested to see, would they skip Verlander, or maybe they want to skip Blanco, or maybe they'd want to skip Arrigetti. You know, some big decisions there for Espada, but you want all your guys humming and ready to go down the stretch with the playoffs coming up. And of course, it's going to be a tight race. You're going to need them all to perform well. So I wonder if it'll be the innings thing that kind of, you know, pushes Espada in one direction or the other.
after the 18 days off, they oddly have a Tuesday off, the day after Labor Day. Then they play 5 days, then they're off the Monday after that. So there's no use for six starters over that stretch, five games with an off day on either end. So it has to be a performance-driven decision unless the Mariners are about to collapse. And while they faltered really badly for a month and a half, the Mariners' ship seems to be stabilized and fronted by that rotation and the schedule advantage they have over the Astros. I'll be very surprised if Seattle fades. In fact, I think now it may take 90 wins for the Astros to get this division, which turned out to be the exact magic number with the tiebreaker to get it over the Rangers last season.
Well, another part of this narrative about Houston fighting for most of the season with a hand tied around their back has been the absence of Kyle Tucker. And that's been what's been amazing of seeing them be able to fight their way back to the top of the division is that they've done it entirely without Tucker. Both Joe Espada and Dana Brown are optimistic about the stride that Tucker is now making in his rehab. It seems that we may see him back by the end of the month, fingers crossed. How does his return and extending this lineup hide some of those weaker parts that we've seen, like a Chaz McCormick or a Myers, because you're pushing everything down?
Kyle Tucker was a top five MVP candidate when he went down. He doesn't have to be anywhere close to that guy upon returning to fortify the Astros lineup, because it's been one failed bat after another. McCormick and Myers and Loperfido and Cabbage. Right, Pedro Leon got his brief little cameo, and they've gotten quality overall output from none of them. So Kyle Tucker at performance for Kyle Tucker would be a significant upgrade. And if Kyle Tucker draws walks at the career-shatteringly high level that he was earlier this season, as another guy to create more traffic in the lineup, and I think coming back, he probably goes in the five spot, that you split Diaz with the two lefties. But I'll believe it when I see it. You know, they've been optimistic how many times over the last 2 months. But yes, Kyle Tucker, he doesn't even have to be great. And he's a boon to the Astros cause.
Yeah, just looking at the numbers right here, the Astros are ninth in OPS in baseball right now. And that's without having Kyle Tucker for a good portion of the season. I expect that to go up. And then I also wonder if this wrinkle of Yordan playing left field, is Tucker going to be 100% coming back, or are they maybe going to want to DH him from time to time as he's, you know, getting back, and maybe they don't want to push him too hard and play him in right field every single day. You hope that he's only coming back if he's 100%, but this has been such a long, mysterious injury. Who knows? So it just made me think, I wonder if we might see Tucker in that DH spot a little bit, as they're just trying to be careful with him. And what a great development it is that you can use Yordan regularly in left. And because Jake Myers is such a good defensive center fielder, kind of gives you some cushion at the other outfield positions, because you have somebody that's so talented in center field. So that'll be something to watch for. I hope they don't rush Tucker back. And I know that seems strange to say because it's taken so long, but clearly this was a really serious injury.
I think there's very little doubt that Kyle Tucker is not playing right field every day upon his return. And unless the doctors say, hey, you're really compounding the risk, you know, if it's been that bad bruise, if you come back even 2 days too early, the chances exponentially grow of a full-blown fracture occurring in there. As long as he's cleared medically, give me 70% of Kyle Tucker, because that's better than 100% of everyone else who's been that third outfielder in his absence.
Kendall Graveman has flown under the radar as he's been rehabbing this season, but his camp continues to be optimistic that he could be available by the end of the season. We've spoken about the volatility at middle relief for this team. Does Kendall Graveman give you anything? Does that make you any more optimistic about solidifying the middle of your bullpen?
Yeah, it was an interesting development to hear, since his season was declared dead in January after he had the surgery. So we have the sort of the under the radar ex-Mariner relievers pining to join the Astros cause to fight it out over the Mariners, right? Penn Murphy, who the Astros claim, knowing that he was injured, maybe could come back late in the year, right? He is within range of maybe getting back in September. Look, neither guy would be pitching important innings. Brian King has actually given him some good work as a lefty reliever, Caleb Ferguson so far. So where really would be the role for Graveman or Murphy? Credit to both for the diligence to even having it as a possibility. I'm sure Graveman wants to get back on the mound before he enters free agency to tell teams, hey, I could pitch in a big league game. But I couldn't see a consequential role for either of them unless the Astros get back into the bullpen injury issues.
I mean, if Graveman's right, Dana Brown traded for him. He's come here twice and, I mean, gave up Corey Lee to get him. And then, you know, we get that news that he's not going to be pitching anymore, at least for this season. That was the thought. And then not long after that, they go get Hader. So I think they had a lot invested in Graveman being a part of the back end of this bullpen. It just hasn't worked out because of injury. But, you know, when he's healthy and right, he's a good back end of the pen reliever. He throws hard. He's got some nasty stuff. It's just coming back from a shoulder injury. He hasn't pitched all year. It's just hard to count on that. It's a numbers game. Taylor Scott's been really good. But, man, if Graveman could give them something, that would be spectacular. It's just, can he do it? I mean, he's just now kind of getting going. You know, we're about midway through August. Not a lot of runway for him to get back if he's going to do it.
We'll leave it there. That's it for this episode of Stone Cold Shows. If you listen to the podcast and you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other YouTube channel, Sports Map Texans on YouTube, and we'll have more content for you during the week, including a live Texans post-game reaction to Giants Texans this Saturday. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.